Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back. We are on episode number
117.
Thank you so much for joining us at the Modern Yogi Podcast. We are on Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text number 20. Wow.
What's your name?
Oh, my name is Shama Sangeeta.
My name is Priyadarshini.
And my name is Shamali. And are you guys feeling in a bit of a festive mood?
Yes.
We wish you a Hare Krishna.
We wish you a Hare Krishna.
We wish you a Hare Krishna.
And a happy
New Year. That's okay.
Girl. On point as always.
Girl. Suck the landing. All right. What's a quick recap of the last episode? Very quick. We're getting just deeper into the... It's mode central, okay?
It's mode central.
It's a lot of modes.
Yes. So what's the recap, Shama?
Okay, when someone dies in passion, they take birth in this. And someone dies in ignorance, he goes to the animal kingdom. So it's like really just going deeper into... what happens in these modes. And so in goodness, real knowledge develops, in passion, greed develops, in ignorance, foolishness, madness, and illusion develop. Mm-hmm. So just going deeper and deeper into what actually are these modes, what happens in these modes, and what are the results of all of these modes.
And what happens to us, like where we go based on these modes.
Yeah.
Higher planets, lower, hellish planets, stay in earthly planet.
Yeah.
And not really, when we can all go into the mode of goodness, that's what's truly going to bring peace to the world, you know? Because if the world is in ignorance, passion, or a mixture, that'll just lead to so many different forms of darkness, anxiety, and
miseries.
And we see that. That's the state we're in. So we can all transcend to the mode of goodness and then beyond.
Beautiful.
So nice.
All right. The invocation, please, ladies.
Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation: I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them. All right, chapter 14, text number 20, Priyadarshini.
Not tired at all. Sorry. All right. When the embodied being is able to transcend these three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age, and their distresses, and can enjoy nectar even in this life.
Wow. Even in this life.
Wow.
I always kind of understood that if you like transcend the modes and like tried to be more Krishna conscious, you can go back to Krishna and then transcend the modes or transcend birth, death, old age, and disease. But this one says you can even transcend and enjoy even in this life.
You can even enjoy. Yeah. Cause I think your enjoyment would be transcendental. Like it would be enjoyment of, you know, Krishna's pastimes and like these ways which are really wholesome and keep you in this like really safe, wonderful bubble of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the phrase, we can create heaven on earth, right? Because we can enjoy the happiness of spiritual life.
You also, make it also spiritual life too.
Spiritual life, even when in this body, because after leaving this body, we are certain to go to the spiritual sky. So then that means that even in this body, we're going to enjoy that spiritual happiness because we're mentally already there.
Yeah. Prabhupada says that devotional service and Krishna consciousness is the sign of liberation from material entanglement.
Yeah. So when we're really free from the influences of the modes of material nature, that's when we enter into devotional service.
Amazing. Okay. So I remember for the previous episode, we were talking about how if you start practicing Krishna consciousness, one of the side effects that it puts you in the mode of goodness, right? And then in that process, maybe you become more in the mode of goodness, but also overpass goodness,
surpass.
Thank you. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. And then you really get into devotional service. So it's like all just like that ladder we've been talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So super
and
cool.
What a gift that would be this Christmas to experience the happiness from heaven on earth.
That'll be my gift to you guys. Yes. On a little sticky note. There you go. Practice devotional service.
I'll take it. Put it in my stocking stuffer. Alrighty.
Text 21, Shama Sangeeta.
All right. Ooh, Arjuna is speaking.
Nice. Whoa. That's a shift, right?
Wow.
It's been a while.
It's been a minute. He's been listening for a really long time.
He's a great listener.
He is a great listener, and we're still on a battlefield.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Arjuna inquired, "Oh, my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known? Oh, sorry. By which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior, and how does he transcend the modes of nature?" Mm. Wow. Okay, let me repeat that again.
Yes, please.
Arjuna inquired, "Oh, my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? How does he transcend the modes of nature?" Okay, so just this is a direct question based off of what Krishna just talked about, right? So
yeah, it's such a good question because he's like, well, okay, now that I understand that, like, how do you actually know if you surpass them? Because like sometimes some things can seem like their mode of goodness, right? Sometimes, but they might be transcendental. Like, how do I know, you know, if I've actually understood what you said? What should I be behaving like?
Yeah,
right.
This is a wonderful clarifying question, actually.
It's three different types of questions. So the first one, as we said, he's asking for the symptoms of a transcendental person. How do we know? The second question asks how he lives and what are his activities? Are they regulated, not regulated, etc.? And then Arjuna inquires of the means by which he can attain. Like, okay, great. I understand it. How can we get there ourselves? How can I attain that transcendental nature? And that is very important because unless we know the direct means that we can be situated and always transcendental, there is no possibility of showing the symptoms unless we know how to achieve it.
Yeah, totally.
I'm at the edge of my seat. This
I know. I want to know the answer so bad, too.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else before we move on to the answer that Krishna gives us?
I mean, no. We're all right now being Arjuna. Like, tell us, Krishna.
What to Krishna, do? Please. Transcend the modes. How do we transcend the modes?
Find out on the next text.
All right, Shamali. Text 22 through 25.
Oh, wow.
It's a doozy. It's a big one.
So we're back to Krishna speaking. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal towards the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature."
Well, I'm going to be honest. I zoned out halfway through that. Okay,
that was tough.
One giant list of how to transcend the modes of nature. How about we break it down like one sentence at a time?
Also, could we attach, and you tell me if this is doable, could we attach a person, character, or like some... It could be fictional, it could be real, it could be like spiritual to each of these activities so that we can recall them better?
100%.
Okay.
100% we can. Okay. Do you want to do it one sentence at a time, Shamali?
Yes. Yes, I do. Alrighty. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "O son of Pandu, he who does not hate..." This makes me chuckle. "I hate elimination." Or sorry.
Illumination.
That's what I mean. "I hate illumination." Okay. So, "he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present or long for them when they disappear."
What does that mean? So, illumination in what sense?
So I think like what Krishna's actually saying are like the symptoms of the three modes actually here, right?
Ooh.
It's like when these things show up in your life, illumination, like good things, right?
Right.
That show up in your life, attachment, passion, when you're in the mode of passion, right? And delusion is like obviously a symptom of mode of ignorance. So like,
you're a genius.
I'm a genius.
Look at you, girl.
So he's basically saying that like when these things show up, right, and when they are present, whether they're there for a really long time or they disappear, we are not kind affected by them. Right?
Who's a good example of that?
Ooh.
Just a quick side note. Shamali, those are not, it's not the camera. It's the phone.
Oh.
Oh, all right.
I heard it before I sent the texts. Okay.
Honestly, like, I don't know. Would your mom be a good example of like, through, there's so many things that she's gone through in her life and like, she's been able to like, be detached through good times, passionate times, ignorant times, like all of that. I really feel like your mom is like a really good example of like being like undisturbed throughout these things.
Yeah. That's very sweet. I actually 100% agree. She is such a grounded force and she has shown me through so many very stressful moments in life what it feels like to not get overwhelmed. Like I'll give one example even. We used to live in Dallas and, you know, we had a house there in the right across the street from the temple. And when we moved to California, we rented out that house. There was a whole thing that happened that I won't even get into the details, but basically, two of the people at the time that were renting it, I think they set that part of the house on fire and they ended up dying in the fire. Like it was a whole weird scenario. Wow. Where, yeah, I just... Anyway.
Wait, these were the tenants?
Yes.
This was a while ago. It was like this couple and you know, the reason that the firemen and the police and investigators think it was intentional was because when they investigated, there was huge bottles of gasoline in the living room. So it kind of, it seemed like, I have no idea why. I don't even know these people. They were friends of friends like from the community.
Right.
So my mom rented it to them and this whole situation happened. And, you know, we're living in California and from the outside, she just starts hearing from afar, all of this thing is unfolding. And she was so stressed out in this period. And she was also dealing with her mother, who my grandma has already passed away now. But at that same timing, she was trying to deal with her mother who was older and in Argentina. And all of these things were weighing on her so much. And I remember from afar, it was the middle, like it was almost the middle of the night. She was making all these calls, trying to manage things. And at one point for that night, she had done everything she could. And she was in such like anxiety that she just went, grabbed the beads and started chanting. And that's when almost like she just throws her hands in the air. And it's like, Krishna, please help me. And she was clutching to the mantra like never before. And it was so amazing to see that through such stressful situations, she was turning towards the mantra and was like, okay, I've done everything I could to manage this right now. I will continue in the morning, but right now all I can do is chant. And she held on to that so much. Mm. So she's definitely almost like the thing I visualize is like, yeah, you take a deep breath, head down, do what you have to do. And once you've done everything in your control duty wise, then you surrender. And she is the perfect embodiment of that. Absolutely. Yeah. And thank you for bringing her up because I absolutely think that she embodies this.
Yeah. And it's like all of these symptoms of all these various modes, we're going to experience them throughout our entire life, but we can't be, when they're gone, we can't like long for them when they disappear. When something good happens, we're like, oh man, I like, that's great. But I'm going to be attached to that feeling. Or when it disappears from our life, we're like, oh man, I still wish I had that. And then like that intention of hankering for it. So all of these modes are going to affect us in so many ways, but we cannot be too affected by them.
Right.
Wow. Next one.
All right. Who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities. So it's very similar to what we talked about. It's like not being disturbed through all of these.
Yeah, it almost makes me feel like the previous one was slightly different just because that one was unwavering. Because the first one was like, does not hate these or the lack thereof. But it's like hard to really understand. Because it seems very abstract.
I almost, with this, the first sentence, picture someone who like, they just want to be connected to Krishna and serve Krishna. They're not like, I am striving for illumination and my own enlightenment. No, I don't. Like, they're neutral. It's like, yeah, if it comes, it comes. But I just want to love Krishna.
If I have to be attached for some reason, I have to be attached for some reason. If I have to have some delusion, I will have some delusion. If I have to have some wonderful thing happen, illumination, then that will be it. And if that doesn't happen, that will be it.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it's almost like we've talked about this a long time ago when we were talking about just this position of neutrality. Because when you hate like
you're fixated so much on what you don't want to be, you become almost obsessed with it. So it's like this more neutral standpoint.
That's so funny because the next line is neutral. It's like remaining neutral and transcendental.
Right. Absolutely.
They're kind of connected.
They're all connected. So unwavering and undisturbed through all of these reactions of the material qualities is like, even when they do happen, they're not shaken so much by it.
Absolutely.
I was thinking of making it silly and make like characters, but I feel like it's actually really hard. These are very Krishna speaking now, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Krishna is describing a very, very specific, special kind of person, right? And it's not like an easy one to just...
Something we're all striving to be. Mm-hmm.
This is almost like Krishna preparing us, like, you know, there's going to be hardships in this life. Yeah. And he's almost acknowledging, like, life is hard.
But not just hardships, like, also great things.
Exactly.
Right? It's like, there's going to be great, there's going to be bad, there's going to be kind of neutral, like, and you should not waver, you should not be disturbed. Like all of these things, right? Don't hate it. Don't love it. Like just kind of be neutral.
Equipoised.
You know what this makes me think of? Have you guys seen parts of or heard of the show The Chosen with the life of Jesus?
No, I've heard of it.
There's one scene where like, you know, Jesus walks on water and the apostles, they're all young guys. They're in the boat and Simon's having this whole lapse of faith because he starts seeing Jesus performing miracles for everyone when he let his own wife have a miscarriage. So he feels this anger like, how could you let this happen to me? How? Aren't you supposed to be able to do all these great things? And it's stormy and they're going through the storm. And all of a sudden in the distance, he sees Jesus walking on the water towards their boat. And Simon starts yelling at Jesus like, how could you this? How could you that? And then Simon says, if you really can do what you say you can do, make me walk on water. So Simon gets off the boat and starts walking on the water. And you can see that whenever he's keeping his eyes set, looking at Jesus and having faith in him, he's able to do that. But whenever he starts getting scared and looking around, he starts sinking below the water. Mm-hmm. And finally, in an emotional scene, he grabs onto Jesus and Jesus said something like, oh, my child of little faith, I have such plans for you in this life of great joys and of great sorrows. And they are all meant for you. But you like kind of like the concept was you can't question me so much and let your faith be so shaken when these highs and lows come. It's all meant for you and your growth. And oh, one of little faith. And Simon's crying and saying, please, oh, never let me go. Never let me go, my Lord. So we're going to go through the ups and the downs. And we have to have faith that Krishna's still with us and also waiting for us as the goal. He is the path, the goal, the sustainer, the witness, everything.
That's a great example, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like God knows that we're going to go through all of these things. And he's like, just don't worry. Have faith. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
All right. The next one. Remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active.
Yeah. So it's almost
Are these separate ones? So remaining neutral and transcendental?
Knowing that the modes alone are active. I think it could be separate or together. Like in general, we want to remain neutral and transcendental.
Knowing that the modes are the ones affecting and that we don't have to partake.
Yeah. Like we know we're going to be feeling sometimes the effects of the modes that happen in this world. Anxiety, fear, ignorance, passion, goodness, they're going to be at play, but we can try to be observers of it. Like, yes, I am maybe feeling more the mode of X, Y, or Z right now. And that's going to be there and it's okay.
Yeah. And letting the emotion pass, right? Just watching it like a cloud.
Like whenever I would get nervous for ice skating competitions in this one sports psychology book, they said, I might have said this before, how Buddhist monks, I don't know if all or some or specific type, but the Buddhist monk would talk to the nerves and say, oh, hello, my good friend. Thank you for coming and preparing me for the task at hand.
Oh, wow. They would talk to their nerves?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, actually.
That is.
Nice.
It's like a good acknowledgement and like surpassing it. Otherwise, you can't name it, can't say it, but you're feeling it all over your body and it takes over you. So it's good to like address it. That's so sweet.
Yeah. Who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress.
Yeah.
We chatted about this a lot.
Yeah. There's the song that I grew up hearing, happiness and pain come and go, just like the seasons. It continues. It was a banger of the time. Just like winter and summer seasons flow.
We're getting somewhere.
Sad.
Yeah. You're doing so good.
Let's go with that. Okay. Let's go with that. That was great. That's great. Ooh, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with equal eye.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like whatever God, like it's whatever's given to you, whether it's dirt, a stone, or a piece of gold. It's like this notion of being equipoised with whatever you receive.
Also, like not, it requires a lack of greed, right? Yeah. Like it's like you can appreciate earth for being like so significant and beautiful. You can appreciate a stone for being so significant and beautiful. You can appreciate gold for being so significant and beautiful. And at the same time, they're useless to you because that's not what you need.
Yeah. Prabhupada says a little bit about this whole, the stone and gold notion in the purport, saying that one who is really situated, this ideal we're striving for, he accepts things that are favorable for his duty in Krishna consciousness, but otherwise he has no necessity of anything material, either a stone or gold. And these next few lines are beautiful. He takes everyone as a dear friend who helps him in his execution of Krishna consciousness and doesn't hate his so-called enemy. He is equally disposed and sees everything on an equal level. Oh, those are the next lines.
Yes.
Okay. We'll pause there. That was the part about the stone and...
Yes.
Ooh, who is equal towards the desirable and the undesirable?
Yes.
Yeah. That's the next one?
Okay, yeah. That basically means that we're equally disposed and see everything on an equal level because we know perfectly well that we have nothing to do with material existence. What a thought, right? That we know... this existence has nothing to do really with us, but we so much buy into the illusion. And when we can remember, I have nothing to do with this, then people will come and go and say things that please us, say things that disturb us, but we can kind of just be a little removed from it because we know, it's okay. This is all just kind of a dream and I don't need to buy into the illusion so deeply.
This part reminds me of like seeing everyone, even like a dog eater, a Brahmin, a dog, a cat, like with equal vision. It's a little bit hard to do this sometimes when you're going through life and you meet different people and different views on a lot of things. But I think the goal is to strive towards equality and seeing Krishna within them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For some reason, I know this is silly, but it made me think of eggplant because you look at me like it's crazy, but Abhijit doesn't like eggplant. So I was thinking of like, what is undesirable? And I was thinking like a very
thinking eggplant emoji. I was like, where are you going with this?
No. Maybe for you. But anyways, so undesirable and like to see something that is like ice cream, like if you put it in other, not just people, but just things in general, like something very delicious to eat and something that may be like very nutritious and healthy, but you don't want to eat. Like sometimes they say like, drink a spoonful of what kind of oil? Whatever, maybe even olive oil, ghee, whatever, something for your body, for its health, but it's not pleasant. It's not whatever. Mm. So somebody with this kind of qualification might see something that is desirable and undesirable as, well, it is what it is. It's just like something that needs, you know, it's just what it is. It's not something to like fuss about. Like, okay, it's not desirable. Oh, well, I got to drink it. I'll drink it.
That's interesting because I just looked at a line, the purport that kind of supports what you're saying, Priya, that Prabhupada said, one doesn't actually need this material body, kind of along the line of thought that we are not this body, we're the soul. So we don't need to accept the dictations of the material body. So the material body will tell us this and that. But if we just, you know, we get beyond it, we can just do what we know we need to do for our ultimate health and then continue on our path of trying to do something valuable with this life.
Yeah, totally.
All right, next one.
Yes.
Who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor.
Ooh. Honor and dishonor.
So that is very interesting because, that next portion that Krishna is saying is the dealings of a transcendentally situated person. So someone who's materially situated, they're pretty generally affected by what's so-called honor and dishonor offered to the body. But Prabhupada says the transcendentally situated person is not affected by such quote-unquote false honor and dishonor. So he just accepts whatever's favorable for his Krishna consciousness.
How do you think that is, like, if you had to think about your own life and make it more applicable to everyday life and not like this huge grandiose thought process of honor and dishonor, but like just like a even praise and blame, right? Like when you think about it in that way, like, I mean, when I think about it, I think like, well, the immediate thought I had was blame because I did something wrong or blame because I'm falsely being accused.
Right.
And does it matter? Because when you're so well situated, it's like either way, it's like, I understand. Like you just
absolutely
have humility and just, you know, sort of it does not face you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking of it in a similar way of like, yeah, honor and dishonor can almost feel like medieval terms. My honor, my dishonor. Mm-hmm. But I was taking it in the modern day way of like something someone says that'll deflate you versus something they say that will inflate you. Mm-hmm. And it could be things that are very valid to get happy or sad about. But this is almost like it takes the pressure off of you to remember like, whatever.
Yeah. Right. And at the same time, not without taking accountability if it is something to take accountability for. Right. So it's like a very interesting thought process.
Whatever when it comes your way. But if you offend someone, then taking accountability for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think blame is a little bit as criticism a little bit, right? And praise and criticism. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, okay, someone can praise me, but I can't get too puffed up about it. Someone can criticize me, but I can't also like lower my self-esteem to the lowest standard, right?
Mm-hmm. I love that. Say it again.
So praise is praise when someone says something good. Yeah. Don't get too puffed up about it. And then when someone is criticizing me, take it into consideration if something is wrong, but also like not plummet to the deepest depths of low self-esteem.
Yeah, that's so huge. It's actually such an important part because I think sometimes even humility is seen as like the difference between humility and self-esteem is actually confused. People think if I think myself the lowest of the lowest, I am being humble. But sometimes it's really not about self-esteem. It's about like understanding, like how would you define humility in this case?
Not having an ego.
Yeah. Like
not thinking that I did this.
Yeah.
Right. Cause we're always trained to, like, I always remember that Krishna verse where Krishna's talking about how he is the ability in man, right? He is the talents within us, like everything, forgetfulness, remembrance, all of that stuff. Krishna is giving us all of those things, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that you hit it right in the nail.
Yeah.
Is that the phrase?
Sure. Let's go with that.
I don't know if that's the phrase. Anyways, but like, I think you got it right to the point because if you're thinking like, oh, I'm just the worst of the worst, you're not really like, the humility is not there. But if you're thinking like, I am able to do this because Krishna has empowered me to do so and I'm grateful for this opportunity to serve, right?
Yeah.
Then that is like real humility.
Yeah.
Mm. So you don't want to put yourself down. You want to just, you know, continue forth in the efforts to move this movement forward and do the services that you want to do and whatever that is.
Situated well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor.
Can I say one thing about the last part? And I think that's a very important point because Krishna wants us to connect back with him. So if we get so in this notion of maybe almost like false humility, like, oh, I have no qualifications, I'm so worthless, that's not going to help us make progress. And that's not also, Priya, you said something I really liked and we need to help carry this movement forward. So I think you bridged the gap nicely when you said we need to acknowledge what gifts has Krishna given us. They come from him, but B, also it helps to recognize what do we even have to work with? What are our natural gifts and our natural talents? Because in order to give back in service to this world, to this movement, to humanity in general, we need to know what we have to give back. Because if we're like, I don't have any gifts, I don't have any qualifications, then we're going to do nothing. So let's recognize what have we been given and how can we give back?
Right. So to connect that all together, I think what you said, Shamasangita, was very, very well said about like when we get blame, we don't consider it to be a deflating self-esteem shaking of your identity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you get praise, you also don't think, oh, well, I'm the greatest, I'm the whatever. Like, you just really know how to balance those two.
Yep.
Mm.
All right, next one.
Yes.
Who treats alike both friend and enemy?
Mm.
I know we talked about this a little bit. Yeah. Sometimes it's a little bit hard.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest.
You guys have a lot of enemies. it's just a lot of hard,
just,
you know?
Mean coworkers.
Oh.
I mean, just like people who are like, I mean, not enemies per se. Like, I'm not going to go to battle with them. There are people just like cut you off and then give you the finger. You know what I mean? Like that happens a lot. Maybe
you have road rage.
No, I don't.
I'm kidding. No, other people have road rage around you.
Yes, correct.
Some karmic thing.
I definitely piss off a lot of people on the road. And so, I don't know. But just being equal and being like, okay, this person has Krishna inside of them, even though they just flip me the bird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
That one's pretty self-explanatory.
Yep.
And be kind to everyone, regardless.
Be kind to everyone. And who has renounced all material activities? We're working towards that one, guys. We're working towards that. That one's a hard one.
Yeah.
But such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else? There's part of the purport that I like how he worded it. It encompasses kind of all of this. It says, when one is actually out of this material body, then okay, naturally we're out of the clutches of material nature. But as long as we're not out of the body, we should be neutral. And this concept of neutrality, we do not desire to enjoy the body, nor do we desire to get out of it. That concept of being equipoised, neutral, and that's how we become transcendentally situated. And then as the devotees, we become automatically free. So this concept of heaven on earth, we can walk through this world totally free from the modes which we've been talking about. If we can neither strive for all of these things nor hate them, we're just doing our thing, trying to serve Krishna. Trying to do our duty and work with what we've been given.
Yeah. And if you think about a time when you were feeling super Krishna conscious and super devotional and just like looking at Krishna and looking at the deities. And then you're like, Krishna, if I don't make it back to you in this lifetime, that's okay. Because just doing service to you is making me so happy. And that's okay. I will try lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Mm-hmm. And like, it can be, you can create that heaven on earth just by being in that mode of love for Krishna and that devotional service for Krishna.
So sweet.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right. Text 26.
Priyadarshini.
Ooh. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman.
Ooh. Okay.
Ooh. Should I read the definitions of Brahman and we try to guess before we even read the text which one it is?
Let's go for it.
All right. Definition number one, the individual soul. I don't think so. All right. Number two, the impersonal, all-pervasive aspect of the Supreme.
Could be.
I think so. Yeah.
Maybe.
Based off of the next verse, I think it might be. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number three, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maybe.
Ooh. Could be.
I don't know. Comes to the level of Brahman, comes to the level of Krishna. Krishna's never said you can become to the level of me.
Well, he says you can become qualitative like me, not quantitative.
Yeah, I feel like the phrasing is not quite something Krishna would say. So I don't know. I'm just putting it out there. Okay. And then number four, the total material substance.
You know what makes me think why it might be referring to we become as good as Krishna's nature? Because of this one part of the purport, should I read that one part that I think will infer which version of Brahman it is?
Go for it.
Because it starts by saying, one who surrenders to Krishna at once surmounts the influence of the modes of material nature. And the Lord says, his nature is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. And the living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme as gold particles are part of a gold mine, which means the living entity in his spiritual position is as good as gold, as good as Krishna in quality. So that's why maybe we'll become as good as Krishna in quality. Not to mean we are Krishna. We still have our individuality because otherwise Prabhupada says there would be no question of bhakti yoga because bhakti yoga means that the Lord is there and the devotee is there. And the activity of exchange of love between the Lord and the devotee is there. There has to be individuality of two persons present for the Supreme and the individual person to have a relationship. So we'll still be ourselves, but in quality, if we can elevate ourselves and transcend the modes, we'll become as good as Krishna in quality.
Yeah, actually, I think you're exactly on the dot because the last sentence, and I don't think you read this, Prabhupada says, this means that one must qualitatively become one with Brahman, in this case, talking about Krishna.
Right.
By attainment of Brahman, one does not lose his eternal Brahman identity as an individual soul.
So interesting.
He's tricking us a little bit with all the definitions.
The wordplay, yeah.
Yeah, but it definitely is. Become one with Krishna.
Right.
By attaining Krishna, one does not lose our individual soul identity.
Right. So I love that example of the gold particles in the gold mine. We are not the entire gold mine. We are not God. but we're a little part and parcel, a little gold particle of it. How beautiful.
That's one a really that, nice analogy.
Yeah. One thing that helped me realize what we were talking about is like, there's one line that says, to be a personal assistant to a king, one must acquire qualifications. Mm. Thus, the qualification is to become Brahman or freed from all material contamination.
Because that gets us closer to what Krishna is, which is completely free of these things.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yep. Nice.
That's super helpful. Can we break down the text itself one more time, even though we just understood it?
Yeah.
So one who engages in full devotional service, check, understand.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Unfailing in all circumstances.
So I think no matter what life throws our way, we're going to stay fixed. I'm not going to just on a whim and on speculation be like, I don't feel it today. I'm not too inspired. Bye, Krishna. See you later.
Yeah, we stop that loving service to Krishna.
Yeah. I've never seen that word unfailing. That's so interesting.
Good word.
Okay, yeah. At once transcends the modes of material nature.
Okay.
So doing service and not just going, whimsically. I don't want to do this, yeah, whatever. At once you reach you transcend the modes of material nature.
Mm-hmm. Go beyond goodness, passion, ignorance.
Yes. And then we come to the level of Krishna.
Right. We'll be same in quality as Krishna.
Thus come to the level of Brahman.
Yeah, because we already have that spark of Krishna in our hearts and our soul is Satchidananda, knowledge, bliss, eternality. So we just refine ourselves and come more to that divine nature. And basically this entire verse we just read is a reply to Arjuna's third question that is, what is the means of attaining to the transcendental position?
That makes sense because think about it. Like if you want to get closer to Krishna, you got to get rid of all that greed. Mm-hmm. You got to get rid of that unwillingness to try.
Yeah. Like
that, you know, the darkness of ignorance.
All of the things.
All of those things in order to be able to like really be happy with Krishna, because all of those things are holding us back.
Yeah. You know?
They're kind of like, have you ever worn clothes in a pool? Like maybe too many clothes that you should not be wearing this many clothes in a pool.
Yeah.
And you feel like you're being dragged down.
Mm. Yeah.
So like these modes are dragging us down and we just got to like remove them and not really be a part of them so that we can, you know, be...
Literally transcend. Go higher.
Yeah. That's a good way to think about it. It's weighing us down. I like this little line that Prabhupada says, Krishna activities are known as bhakti yoga, always acting for Krishna. So we want to do Krishna activities.
Very sweet. Oh, that's so nice.
All right, ladies, are we on the very last text?
Oh my gosh. Are we going to do
chapter 14?
The very end of the year.
Wow.
Dun, dun, dun.
Whoa.
This is really cool.
Very exciting.
Okay. All right. Shama Sangeeta, text 27 of chapter 14, the final one.
All right. Krishna is saying, and I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness.
Do you want to read it one more time?
Yeah. Krishna is saying, and I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness.
So with the definitions of Brahman that Priya had just read.
Yeah.
Which one is this one?
Well, I think I understand what he's saying, actually, but I can read the definitions if you want me to.
No, just tell us the one you think it is, if you want to.
The impersonal, all-pervasive aspect of the Supreme.
Right. So, yeah, it's the energy that surrounds everything. It's the most impersonal side of Krishna, because if you think of it as a ladder, that we're going steps closer and closer and closer to his most personal, intimate side.
Yeah. So I think with the previous text, we were not actually talking fully about becoming exactly like Krishna. I think we were talking about this impersonal aspect of Krishna because it's like, it's like getting closer,
right?
You know, clearing ourselves of all these things that are holding us down and getting closer to Krishna, but not exactly Krishna. And so he's clarifying this by telling us that what he was referring to was his impersonal form. And how and actually Prabhupada in the purport word explains that this, if we are able to, so there's like levels of understanding, which there's always in the Bhagavad Gita, right? But he says Brahman is the beginning of transcendental realization, right?
And so sorry.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say, like, if someone starts becoming spiritual, the first thought process they have is, what is God?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, it's light, mm-hmm. it's nature, it's impersonal.
Yes.
So the first step into realization is actually impersonal Brahman.
Right.
So that's what Krishna is referring, I think, so here in this verse, right? Okay. Then he goes, Paramatma, the supersoul, is the middle or second stage in transcendental realization. Mm-hmm. So once you understand there's a God, there's a spark of something out there, the second part is actually there's God in everyone. And that's like the second level of realization.
Interesting. Yeah.
The second level of understanding what's happening in this world.
Yeah, I might feel God's presence in my heart. I start talking to that little presence.
Yeah, exactly. And then the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate realization of the Absolute Truth. So understanding Krishna himself, that's the final understanding.
These are like ladders, stepping stones.
We're starting to connect, to the most personal aspect. And that's why Paramatma and the impersonal Brahman are contained within the Supreme Person.
Yeah. And I have a stupid question though.
Yeah.
Okay.
No question is stupid.
Really? Okay. And so Krishna's like, I'm the basis of the impersonal Brahman. Isn't he saying, he says, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal. Isn't that the same thing three different times? Immortal, imperishable, and eternal.
Well, immortal means forever living. Imperishable means you don't die. Go rotten.
Cannot be destroyed.
Yeah.
And so, eternal means forever. You live forever.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really emphasizing.
Just like covering all his bases, because there might be a slight definition that is like, you know.
Fair.
You know what, Priya, how you had said before, you think they're talking about we become more like the impersonal aspect of Krishna. I think depending on which ladder you go to, it could change the meaning, because further down in the purport. So it could be that what you said, if you're connecting to step one of the ladder, but further in the purport, it says, the Supreme Lord is full in six opulences, and when a devotee approaches him, there is an exchange of these six opulences. The servant of the king enjoys on an almost equal level with the king, and so eternal happiness, imperishable happiness, and eternal life accompany devotional service. Mm. So I think each step of the ladder that you go, you just refine yourself more and more and more and become more in quality, similar to Krishna's personal aspect in his full six opulences.
And we get the perks of being around Krishna.
Yeah, actually, the next part confirms that, but also clarifies. So it says, therefore, realization of Brahman or eternity or imperishability is included in devotional service. Mm. This is already possessed by a person who is engaged in devotional service. Mm. So this aspect of connecting to the Brahman is like one of those steps that you would already surpass if you're doing devotional service. It's the ladder.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's so many examples in Vedic literature, like the four Kumaras, who were first situated in the impersonal Brahman conception of truth, but then they gradually rose to the platform of devotional service. So we can't elevate ourselves beyond the impersonal conception of Brahman without going. Wait, what? One cannot elevate himself beyond the impersonal conception of Brahman. Oh, one who cannot, then runs the risk of falling down. Right. If we stay on step one of the ladder, we can fall back down. We need to strive for the highest point of the ladder.
Yeah. And then I think, you know, here Prabhupada kind of brings it back to Krishna consciousness. And he says, you know, by engaging in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, one is immediately situated in transcendental position and his unlawful desire to control material nature is removed. Therefore, the process of devotional service, beginning with hearing, chanting, and remembering, should be practiced in the association of devotees.
Beautiful.
Gradually, by such association and by the influence of the spiritual masters, one's material desires to dominate is removed and one becomes firmly situated in the Lord's transcendental loving service. Mm. So at the end of the day, you know, Krishna has our back. We just have to hear, chant, remember him. Mm. And that's like the beginning process of devotional service.
Yeah. What are we chanting?
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Or is it like, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare,
Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare.
I love it.
Good job. Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays,
Anything else before we wrap up this chapter?
Nah.
All right. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport for the 14th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the three modes of material nature.
Beautiful. See you guys next time.
See you next time.
Merry Christmas.
And happy holidays. Bye. beautiful souls, if you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.